Welcome back to Mad Props. We're glad that you're here. This week we are joined by Andrea Lee of Somatic Therapy NYC. It's going to be an episode you do not want to miss. A lot of really good stuff in this one. Before we start, make sure you subscribe to the podcast, whether you're on YouTube or if you're on Spotify, wherever you're listening, make sure you subscribe to the podcast so we can continue to grow and continue to bring you the best in podcasting. Also, follow us on social media at Mad Props Pod on literally everything, whether you're on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it. If you're on Facebook, if you're on Instagram, anywhere you are, it is Mad Props Pod. Connect with us there. Comment on our images, comment on our post. You can even argue with us for all I care. Do something. Interact with us. We want to hear from you at Mad Props Pod, wherever you get your social media. So do all that. You can also check us out on our new website, schnabelstudios.com. If you want to find us specifically at Mad Props, it is schnabelstudios.com/, guess what it is, Mad Props Pod. You can find a bunch of the podcasts there. You can find the social media links. You can find the YouTube there. You can find some articles that are being written. Every episode comes with an article. So if you want to read about it before you listen to it, go to schnabelstudios.com/madpropspod, and it'll be there waiting for you so you can see if you actually want to listen to us or not. I think you should, and if you're listening now, that means you already listened. So just keep listening, man. Just keep listening. Before we get started, I want to talk about, and if you've seen the Instagram post already, you'll know where this is going. It's going to be quick. It's going to be brief. We're going to try to change the format a little bit of Mad Props. What does this mean? Are people freaking out? No. Nothing big is changing, all right? Literally, we're changing this format so that there could be more solo episodes and more episodes brought to you overall. That's the big change of all this. I'm going to try to bring on someone else. They're going to help me produce. They may even jump on the mic with me a little bit, and we're going to be able to do different things. Like, I'm going to tell stories about when I was working a certain event, or when I went to a certain event, or something crazy that happened during a filming, something crazy that happened during a podcast, how I got XYZ to join the podcast, how I got XYZ to join a film, things like that. That's all going to be coming to Mad Props. Instead of just interviews, instead of just guests, it's going to be a lot more. I kind of think of it more like how Bill Simmons runs his podcast, where he kind of has a theme around it, but he brings on everybody. I mean, I saw him bring on sports guests like former quarterbacks and NBA players. He brought Austin Rivers and Doc Rivers and all of them. And then I've also seen him bring on somebody that talks about extending the life expectancy in dogs in the future. And that's kind of what we want to do here as well. So there'll be more coming up on that as we get more into that. It won't be happening right away. It won't be happening in this episode, but it will be happening. So we really hope that you enjoy the stuff that's coming out. It's really just so we can make more episodes, make more social media posts, make more content overall for everybody that likes us. And I hope you like us because we like you. So that's coming soon. Mad Props, if you want to learn more about it, go ahead, head to schnabelstudios.com/madprops or head to our social media to see the full video of what I was talking about there. Okay, now that I talked your ear off, now that I just went through, let's get to the episode and let's get to it. Let's get to the episode. Let's get to Andrea. Let's get to everything. This is Mad Props.
Hi, I'm Andrea Lee. Let's start the show.
Andrea, thank you for joining us. Thank you for being here. We really appreciate being here to talk a little about what you do and talk a little bit about life. We're going to just kind of have a conversation, yeah. See where it goes. But thank you for joining us today. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm so happy to be here. And thanks so much for bringing that energy for me, Chris. It is the end of a business day. And I'm really looking forward to having a little bit of time to speak outside of the model of the listener and the facilitator. So I'm very happy to be here right now.
And you've been kind of going on the tour, right? You were saying a little off camera, you've been doing a lot of podcasts and kind of promoting yourself and going. So is it getting to the point where you're kind of getting robotic on these, or
definitely not podcasts? Oh, definitely. They're never the same. I really love talking. I love connecting. I love human exchanges. I mean, obviously with my chosen profession, having conversations, talking, getting curious, and respecting other perspectives is my passion. I've always really admired podcasts. So having such different hosts and having such different experiences has been a joy.
Well, I can't wait for this podcast to get out there, and we be number one on the list. Like, yeah, we did a ton of them, but that was number one. Number one on the list.
Chris is the best.
We're the best. Hey, we're number 11 on Good Pods right now. Just so everybody knows, go listen on Good Pods. Number 11.
Congratulations.
We keep dropping every day. We started at like number 2, and then they're like number 8, and now we're number 11. So we're not going in the right direction, but we're still there. We're still there.
We were in the top three. That's commendable. And, you know, I'm looking at your background, and it is not surprising how you've gamified some of this. Like, we're the best, and we're the... I can tell that you definitely are a clear gamer. Oh, God, is that Mike Tyson knockout?
It is Mike Tyson knockout. It's my favorite possession. So most of the stuff... I just got to say, this is funny. I feel like the last 6 episodes... It started off with me talking about my background because it's just like it's just an interesting talking point and stuff like that. So then my background for people listening is a bunch of comics, and you can see it on our Instagram page, Mad Props Pod, or our Twitter if you want. But it's a bunch of stuff from comics I really enjoy to things that I was given by guests. The only one that wasn't, obviously, is Mike Tyson. I won that in a silent auction. I just put my name down. I was the first one to put there. It was less than it sells for, and no one else bid on it. So I got it for a good price, and now it hangs behind me because I love it. It's Mike Tyson. Punch-Out, signed by Mike Tyson.
What an incredible possession. That is absolutely incredible.
Really good. Yes, it's unbelievable. But the rest of the stuff behind me, it was given to me by former guests. There's a Jason Page card back there. There's also Matt Sheldon card signed by him that's over my left shoulder. The Squirtle was given to me by Rachel on Twitch, who's a graphic designer, and she designs video games, but she also streams on Twitch and stuff like that. I would say a couple of my favorites. I think one might be out of screen right now, but off to my right is a sketch of my girlfriend and I by Scott Koblish. It's us as Deadpool, drawn by the guy that draws Deadpool. So it's like really cool. Yeah, he was a guest on the podcast. And
well, once we're done recording, you're gonna have to move your camera for me, because that sounds really awesome.
I will. You know, I can, let's see if I can get it moved now. So that's it right there. That's my girlfriend and I by Scott Koblish. And again, anybody listening, go on our social media. You can check this out. We'll make sure that's all posted. But that is, like, I love that possession because, like, I love Deadpool. He draws Deadpool. Scott's a great dude. I'm trying to get him to come back on soon, or at least on sketching up our other podcast. And then over my left shoulder, that is a comic strip of Star vs. the Forces of Evil by Darren Nefcy, another former guest. That is from Darren Nefcy, signed by Darren Nefcy. Says, thanks for having us on the show. Has a little sketch of Star in the corner as well. And so some stuff's from former guests. Some stuff's just comics I really like. That's why there's so much Spider-Man, Deadpool, Mario behind me. So that's how I built my background. I've had different backgrounds in different areas I've lived. And when I got here, this is what I wanted.
It's dope. It's really, really enviable. The picture of you and your girl are actually in the screen. But your camera, we had a bad connection for a minute, and I just could not determine what it was. But it's right there. I can actually see it way better now.
I try to keep it like in the shot a little bit, but it usually gets cut out because it's off to the side. I might rearrange some stuff. There's room to rearrange.
It's great.
But for now, that's how
it's
all set up.
It's awesome. Poor Chris is looking at my really boring background. This is also the room where I do remote sessions. So, we try, I think in any profession where you are connecting with someone, to not be overtly dominating their visual field with your own personality when the session is really, hopefully, mostly about them. So my background's really boring. I've just got some plants. Very exciting stuff.
Can you tell us a little bit more about what you're doing in those sessions and what your work is for people that might not know?
Yeah, I am a somatic therapist, and I do in-person sessions, which are really wonderful and fun because I get to actually make physical contact with my clients. But we live in a modern world. We live in a post-Panini world where remote sessions are also very desirable for convenience and distance. And because of it, I get to work with a lot of clients routinely that are not actually even in on the East Coast. I've had the pleasure of working with clients that are not even in this country because of that, which has been really, really exciting and wonderful. But I am based in New York City, and that's where my physical practice is. And I guess I could launch into a little bit about what the heck somatic therapy even is, right? Like, what is that?
Sure. Yeah.
I don't think Chris. Yeah, I don't think Chris really knows what it is, and I think that there is a little bit of mystery around it. Somatic therapy is basically a therapeutic approach where we are bridging the mind with the felt experience. And the felt experience happens in your body. You don't feel heartbroken in your mind. You don't feel sick to your stomach in your mind. You don't feel butterflies in your mind. And when people are going through emotional experiences of anxiety and fear, it's such an embodied experience, such as joy and love. It's so in the body that in this therapeutic approach, we're actually going to that as a resource for, and I'm going to define this really quick, wisdom is just knowledge that we don't know. We're really going to the wisdom of these emotional experiences and expressions to learn more about ourselves so that we can live as who and how we want to be.
So is it more like, I want to see if I'm saying this right, neurologically, sure. Or is it more of like, put it into the mind so the body can feel it type of thing? It's almost like say it into existence or push it into existence, like make your mind feel it so your body will follow after type of thing.
No, it's actually the opposite, where we're going to the felt sense and saying, okay, well, what's going on in your system? I'm going to use anxiety as an example because I think that's something most people can relate to as being challenging. And if someone says, hey, I'm having anxiety, we're working with it as, okay, well, when the anxiety shows up, how does it show up in your body? It shows up as a pit in my stomach. It shows up as a tightness in my chest. It shows up as a racing heartbeat. So we actually go to those physical locations and bring the client into attuning with those physical sensations. With that, and here's a perspective shift, that part of themselves, we're taking anxiety and treating it as though it is a part of that person. And our bodies are designed for safety and protection, first and foremost, all of the time. And your body doesn't differentiate between something physical, like stubbing your toe, or something emotional, like being rejected, or feeling that familiar compare and despair that can happen in modern times. Your body does not give a crap where it's coming from. All it knows is that it feels bad. And it's sending this information throughout your nervous system into your brain, and they're working on a feedback loop called interoception. It's our ability to sense what we're feeling and for our feelings to communicate with our knowing minds so that something can happen. In that feedback loop, sometimes, especially in traditional psychodynamic approaches, we get stuck in the thinking model. But I don't know about you, but I've never been able to think my way out of panic. I've never been able to think my way out of heartbreak or grief. I've never been able to think my way into joy, because these emotions are felt. So we're really going to the felt sense to get that gorgeous wisdom or data or information, if you like, on how the owner of that body, the ego, the mind, I'll use Chris's name here to make it easy. Well, what's Chris's relationship with anxiety? What's Chris's relationship with love? What's Chris's relationship with rejection and insecurity? And how can we improve upon that relationship with these parts of Chris so that he can move throughout the world feeling a lot more in harmony with how he's experiencing these feelings? Most people want to get rid of their anxiety. In my modality, we're not looking to get rid of it as much as we're looking to reconcile the fears so that the anxiety can begin to trust the person like Chris to feel safe and be able to stay within his window of tolerance, which is a nervous system reference, and navigate these in a way that doesn't necessarily need to be so much a five-alarm fire or reason to panic. It's kind of like family therapy for you, your feelings, and your parts.
So, I mean, without giving any free lessons away, how do you find, like, that? Because I feel like everybody's got to be different, right? Like, there's
no sense
to do it.
Don't.
Like, I gave this example to everyone. So I am a part of the big weight loss club. I lost 250 pounds in
that's amazing.
The last couple years. I used to be 450 pounds. I'm now 225. It's
Chris,
big
that's
difference.
Amazing.
Big difference. But thank you. Whenever I talk to people, though, they always say, what did you do? What did you do? Like, what did you eat? How did you work out? All this stuff. Mm-hmm. And what I'll tell them what I did. But what I tell them after that is, just because it worked for me doesn't mm-hmm. mean it'll work for you. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't like fad diets because it's not there's a reason they come and go. It's because they don't necessarily work because there is no one universal way. Like, seeing a nutritionist is a great idea because they're gonna
figure
out something for you. But
yeah.
Going on a diet because everyone else is doing it, they helped this guy lost 90 pounds. It's like, well, it works for that guy. Doesn't mean it's going to work for you. So that's, I feel like this is like the same thing. So how do you find how do you find this in this person, and how do you try to help them once you find it? Like, how do you exert that out of them?
Let me give you a really clear and simplified vignette, as someone might say. I'm going to give you guys a really short story of the journey of someone's anxiety. Okay. So we're going to call him John, for anonymity, and John had been working with his anxiety for a period of time. And he reached out to me because he wanted to try a combination of approaches that included psychodynamic with his current talk therapist and an embodied approach with somatic therapy. When I met John, I learned that he was an only child of divorce and that his mother and father could not be different, more different. They were so different. His mother was very type A, very pragmatic, very analytical. His father was Eastern European, very flamboyant, incredibly feeling. And he lived with his mother primarily. His mother started her own business. And because of that, he had a comfortable financial childhood, but she was also very preoccupied and out of the home. He found at a very early age that if he achieved academically or athletically, that there would be celebration and admiration. He would get some time. So I'm going to pause for a second, and we're going to step out of the session. We are biologically designed to seek approval and acceptance from our nuclear family for, like I said before, safety and survival. Mm-hmm. If you are rejected from your nuclear primary caregivers, that increases your mortality and morbidity rate exponentially. In modern civilization is a relatively new concept in our evolution. We are pack animals. So as I'm hearing this story, I'm thinking, okay, so love and affection is transactional. Validation is being outsourced. It's being strived for. There is a goal. This little kid now is competing with the world around him to get these crumbs of confirmation that his mother is approving and accepting of him. He goes on to tell me that his father was so emotional that it was embarrassing to a fault because it was so different than his mother. So he started kind of rejecting the idea of emotions. That's also very informative. We're going to jump forward to 3 sessions in our work together. He is fully clothed, laying on a massage table, except for his shoes. I want everybody here to be able to picture that. We're in my room together with the lights dim. I've already guided John into connecting with his felt self by noticing what it feels like to be laying down, what it feels like to perhaps feel anything from vulnerable and apprehensive to excited and curious, and everything in between. We've built enough of the foundation for interoception to take place that we're able to address the anxiety directly. So I ask him to tell me what the anxiety feels like, and he says it feels like a hole in my chest. So I ask his permission to place my hands on his sternum, which is the bone that connects your 2 rib cages in the middle. And I place my hand on his sternum and I ask him to really bring his attention there. And we're going to step out of the session for a moment. What I love about somatic therapy is because we're not diagnosing and prognosing, we get to be really creative. And people need creativity to connect these parts of themselves in new ways. So I use similes, analogies, visualizations, lots of creative languaging, and hand gestures can be so incredibly informing. So back into the session, I ask John to connect with the hole in his chest, and I ask him, well, what does it feel like? Does it feel like a pit? Does it feel like a empty well? If you could visualize this hole in your chest, what might it look like? And he said, it looks like a black hole. I said, well, that's really interesting, John, because a black hole's active. That's not a hole. That's passive. It's doing something. How long do you think this black hole has been a part of your system? And he said, forever, which is a common answer that I get, forever, which means as far back as they can kind of remember, they get that sense, that instinct that it's been there for a very long time. Specificities don't matter very much in this when it comes to fact, because we're really going with the feelings. I said, okay, well, John, this black hole that shows up as anxiety, it's doing something. It's pulling things in. What is this black hole pulling in for you? What is it trying to suck in for you? And he said, validation that I'm good enough, that I'm... I said, okay, validation that you're good enough, and it's been here forever, so I'm kind of picturing this showing up in the chest of a little boy, a little version of you. Does that make sense? And he confirmed it did. I said, what do you think it was sucking in back then? And he said, evidence that I was lovable. So this actually isn't anxiety that we're dealing with. It isn't the anxiety that he's been chasing in psychodynamic therapy at all. It's self-worth. So in that moment, we were able to do exactly what that little kid with a black hole in his chest needed to feel lovable. We were able to reparent that part of John. We were able to validate that John was a sweet, wonderful, interesting little boy, not just academically and athletically successful, that he is a good, good person. And whatever he tries to do because he cares, and that's enough. And that was kind of the reconciliation for him with anxiety. I saw him just one more time for a closeout session, and I know that he was very satisfied, not just because of his communication, but because of his future referrals. I mean, if that's not the best compliment you can get, I don't know what it is. But that's just a little example of how going into the felt sensation can really inform the thinking mind.
So finding something that deep, like how long for you does that take? Like,
it's different for everybody.
A couple of sessions, yeah.
It depends wholly on how ready the client is, and I want to be really clear here, not how ready they think they are. Because that's, in my experience, that's been horseshit. I have a lot of clients that are like, oh, I'm so in touch with my body. I do bouldering. I do yoga. I'm a dancer. I'm a Pilates instructor, whatever it is. I'm like, okay, well, that's a mechanical vehicle relationship with your body. That's not what we're going to be here for. I don't need you to plank for me. I need you to actually slow down and listen to what your body is very consistently and constantly telling you, albeit quietly and subtly, before it starts to scream at you, which could look like physical pain, because your body will eventually start to scream. But anywho, it wholly depends on how actually ready the client is, how capable they are, and that's not a plus gold star for them when I say capable. Some clients that I work with are just so wounded from trauma and negative experiences and abuse that it takes a certain amount of time. But it depends on where you are in your healing process. But the short answer is, the quicker that I can know you and the quicker that you can self-actualize into this relationship with yourself, the faster this can go. So I work with clients anywhere between five, that client, John, was five sessions, but most of my clients are 12, 25, and I have many that have been with me for years simply because they like the work and they enjoy the connection. I don't work with people every week. I don't think it's necessary. I don't work with mental illness. There's no need to see you every week. I like to work with clients twice a month. I think every other week is perfectly effective, and it also keeps the accountability on the owner of that body to actually remember the sessions and do the work that they purport that they want to do.
Do you think everyone should go should do therapy when they get a little older? Do you think everyone, even people that don't necessarily
I don't really believe in blanket statements.
In their eyes? Yeah. I understand that, but you know how people say, like, everybody should, you should try it at least once because you never know what's actually being repressed or what's actually in your heart, and you, like, maybe sometimes you don't feel your best and you just don't know why, something like that, and everyone's like, you should at least try it once. Do you have a feeling like that, or do you think, like, you should really need to feel that?
You know, I'll tell you, I don't like to do either ors because I find that most people that have had negative experiences in their lives can fall into black and white thinking. So I like to really demonstrate three options at a time when I can. So I'm going to give you three options.
Perfect.
Option one, you're curious about yourself and you don't feel like you're struggling. Go get curious. Go do, that's awesome. That's fun. That's amazing. Option number two, you do feel like you have some struggles, but you don't know if therapy's right for you. Well, I've got news for you. There are so many different approaches. And I don't just mean in person or Zoom. I mean, there's CBT, there's EMDR, a lot of other acronyms that I'm not going to bore you guys with. But there's also different therapies like MDMA-assisted therapy and HICOMI. There's Phoenix Rising. There's a ton of really amazing things. We live in a really cool time to say, I like camping and I'm curious about therapy. Bro, I bet you could find something like that. You know, there's actually a therapy group called Everyman that is almost exactly that, that comes to my mind. So if you are facing something but you're not sure, get really specific about what you're looking for and challenge yourself to see if it exists. And if you do find it, if it's the right time for you. And option number three, which is neither of those matter if you don't think it's a problem. It's not going to, no therapeutic modality is going to be effectual or helpful if you aren't the one seeking it for either of those reasons, whether it's out of need or just curiosity. Third option is if you're fine, I don't know, ghosting people or having an avoidant attachment style, or if you're fine with staying mid-level at your, if you're fine, if you have happiness, contentment, and satisfaction, then don't go through the motions for something that you don't really want because it won't work anyway.
You're saying if you're not all in, don't bother with it because you're not going to seek any answers.
You're not
going to
see anything
because you're not in it anyway.
You're not in it. It'd be like me saying, my sister, who's passed away, was addicted to drugs. And I could pitch her every single modality, every single rehab, every single kind of support I could possibly give her. But it never was going to change unless she ever wanted it to change. The same thing's true about narcissistic tendencies and insecure attachment styles. The same thing is true.
You've told me that you have a lot of drug addicts in your family. Is that what kind of brought you into this landscape? Is that what brought you into doing this kind of work?
Indirectly, yeah. I had a family of origin where it was so dysfunctional that I became an adult child, which infers that I had to grow up really fast. I was mature and independent in many, many ways, but at the sacrifice of many key developmental steps. So while I was really good and hypervigilant and could read a room, I could be the star of a party, but if anyone wanted a friendship, I would feel so vulnerable and shameful that I wasn't worthy of that friendship. I was living in the duality of overmaturity and missed developmental steps. And being an adult child of addicts or alcoholics is also a whole thing. But eventually, like I said earlier, if you're not listening to your body, if you're not listening to your internal experience, then your body will scream. And an emotional, a psychosomatic emotional kind of component to that might look like a panic attack or anxiety attacks. And sometimes there can be physical manifestations. And in my case, I had TMJ, which I think everyone is kind of familiar with. But I also had hypertonicity in my pelvic floor, which is a chronic clenching condition, because I was a ball of nerves and rage. So I was constantly clenching, and eventually it led to physical pain. So I actually came to somatic therapy because of physical pain. And then after meeting with my somatic therapist and having not that deep conversations, because I didn't think it was a problem, I was like, oh yeah, my mom died 2 weeks ago. And my physical therapist said I should be here. I'm just like, whoa, your mom died 2 weeks ago? I'm like, yeah, she was a junkie. Again, we're so structured for survival and safety. We are so structured for protection. And your monkey brain can do incredible acrobatics to normalize situations that are not normal so that you can get to the next day and you can move on. And I was very much a case of that. So over time, I allowed myself to be really known by this person. And over time, that helped me really know myself.
I mean, that has to help you with connecting with your clients that come up with the background like that, because it gives you the perspective that some of them may have. I feel like a good portion, maybe it's a blanket statement, but I feel like a good portion of your clients, a lot of this stuff comes from youth. I feel like a lot of this, like those anxieties we have and those fears we have come from something when we were younger. Not younger as in
a year ago, Chris.
When we were a child. Go ahead.
So, you know, that's a really good observation. And it's an observation that you are not the only person to pick up on and say, does it all go back to my mother? A lot of my clients have these like kind of laughing moments. They're like, of course it goes back to my mom. But there's a reason for that. So not only is our brain wired for safety protection, not only is our body and our nervous system wired for safety protection, we're also biochemically designed for safety protection. And you are your most vulnerable when you are wholly dependent on your parents. You are such a vulnerable little baby. I mean, we came from primates. And if you look at primates, they are not nearly as dependent as humans are on their parents. So what happens is you are constantly gathering this information for safety and protection through an electrical synapsis. And that electrical synapsis is a neurosynapsis, and it's giving information from your experience to your brain, from your brain to your experience, and it is bidirectional. You are firing 3 times more neurosynapsis per second as a toddler than you are over the age of 25, because evolution has realized that that is when we're most likely to die on our own. So the amount of, you know, they say kind of a nice idiom is children are sponges, because they're designed to be. So not only are you getting an incredible amount of information that you are trying to process, but you do not have the adult perspective to really understand it. So yes, that is a incredibly fertile ground for us to kind of create these internal worlds of, if I cry, I'm weak, or if I complain, I'm going to be rejected. We are so designed to stay in that nuclear family, that little fishbowl, that nucleus of a cell. I love that word, nuclear, that tiny unit. We are so designed to stay safely within that, that it is incredible how that can form in an individual over time.
It's funny. I laughed for a second when you were starting, because I feel like if we had this conversation 1 week ago, I wouldn't be able to follow this as much. I have been reading a book called Brain on Fire. Have you ever heard of it?
I have heard of it. I haven't read it, but I've heard of it.
It is very good. My friend Gabby was reading it. I went to visit my friend Chandler, and that's his girlfriend, and she was reading it. She told me about it. I was like, I have to read this book, so she let me borrow it, and I started reading it, and a lot of the stuff you're saying is in the book of all this stuff, because what happened, for people that don't know what Brain on Fire is about, I wish I could remember the author's name, but she was a writer for The Post, and she had this neurological disease that it was very rare, and basically it was her white blood cells attacked her brain, and like she kind of went psycho and went crazy because her brain was undeveloping. Wow. Basically, and it was a unbelievably good read. I have about 25 pages left, but it was but a lot of the stuff you're talking about was in there about like how the brain communicates with itself and how we learn, basically, is how that is. And like you said, when you're younger and your brain stops developing in your 20s. So like in that whole time before 25. So all that time before, like your brain, as it's still developing, everything it takes in, it keeps there.
Overdrive.
So when you're younger and big, important pieces of life happen, it sticks with you, whether you remember
forever.
It fully or not. Like there's something there that will always be there because that is what your brain will always remember because it was developing so much. It's really lodged in there now, rather than when you're 45 and something happens. Like it's still gonna hurt, and you'll still have you will still have the same effect. But it's just when you're younger, it's gonna stick no matter how much you try to forget it, no matter how much you try not to remember it, it'll always stick there because of how much your brain is developing. So like I if you heard me let out a chuckle when she started, it's because I was like, wow, if this was 1 week ago, I'd be so lost.
But I'm glad.
Perfect timing. Just perfect timing as it goes on. And if you haven't read it, highly, highly recommend it. It is unbelievable how good that book is and how it was put together. I mean, she was a writer, she was a journalist, so it makes sense she was able to put stuff together and put it into a book.
Her name is Susanna Cahalan. Susanna Cahalan is what the Google box is telling me.
That sounds right. I was looking to see if I had it right here, but it looks like I don't. And I was gonna. Oh wait, is this here? There we go. Right there. That is the book.
Okay.
And you're right. You're right. That is her name. So.
And for anybody listening, there is a movie adaptation, but it has a 13% Rotten Tomato score. So I don't know if I would watch that.
I'm not shocked.
Check out the book.
I'm not shocked. I'm not. First of all, you should always check out the book. I was never a reader. I was never a reader when I was young. I was that kid. You know, I was that kid that wouldn't want to read whatever. But I'm not surprised after reading it that it's not a great movie. It is very tough to make this book into a movie. It's a lot of notes and a lot of like explanations of like second accounts and stuff like that.
That's
I'm not surprised. Yes, it stars Chloe Grace something, the one that played Hit Girl and all
that.
Yeah,
she's awesome.
She is awesome. I would see it specifically for her.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Yes, there you go. Yeah. I would see it just for her because I really enjoy her as an actress. But I'm not surprised the movie didn't do well. But the book was amazing. Definitely go read it. It's been out for a while, I guess, apparently. It's a 10-year anniversary in the beginning. I was like, oh, wow. Never even heard of it until this moment. Yeah. But it is really good. But
I want to spring a little bit off of – that is funny. Thank God for that timing. I do want to spring off a little bit about what you said, though, because it's not just wiring in the mind, though, because these neurosynapses are forming neuropathways together, and these neuropathways are occurring throughout your entire body, and we have these major groupings of neuropathways in our system, the sac around our heart and our gut, our enteric system. The bi-directional feedback loop between our gut and our brain is tremendous, and they're really beginning to understand this in relationship to, they're studying right now depression with gut health and how there is so much correlation between the two, that they're believing that there are elements of causation between gut health and mental health.
That would make a lot of sense, because when you think about stress eating or like when people are upset, it's like almost like a satisfaction or gratification.
Yeah.
You eat to feel better, and it would make a lot of sense if there's a big connection between the two. like it would help your brain that much if you did something like that. That's like the sugary foods, going back to what we were talking about with weight loss. Somebody that eats a lot of sugary foods and they can't seem to lose weight. And they're like, why can't I lose this weight? I don't understand. I always go back to the sugar, It's because when you don't eat a lot, and I'm going to assume this is going to go right back to what you're just saying with the stomach and the mind. When you don't eat a lot, your body craves the sugar because it wants satisfaction. It wants that. It wants to feel like something good, and sugar is so sweet and tastes good that because you don't fill yourself up, it feels like it's getting filled up or it's creating that satisfaction. But obviously, it's not.
Yeah, your brain.
Your
brain becomes.
It's an interesting study.
Your brain really becomes hooked to it. You know, there's such a serotonin and dopamine response to sugary foods that your brain starts to become so dependent on it that its own faculties of dopamine and serotonin production and excretion actually takes a break and becomes suppressed because it doesn't want to dysregulate your body, and you're eating so much of it in excess that we end up at a deficit, and that makes us crave the food more. And now we're in this addictive kind of cycle with sugar. Sugar is one of the hardest things to quit.
It is. It's just as addictive as anything else. It's crazy how addictive this. And it's not just sugar specifically. It's the processed sugar that gets everybody. Like the candies and the cakes and the cookies and all that. They have the processed sugar. It's just so addicting. That was a big problem with me. I mean, when I was big, it's not that I ate a ton of junk. I did eat junk. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say I didn't. I was 450 pounds. I obviously ate some junk in my life. But it was more of when I was addicted to it, I would pick out this. Or if I went to the store, I'd get that candy or I'd get that cookie or something like that. And then the big thing with me was portion sizing, which when I was big, my portions were huge. And now it's been long enough to where my portion's a lot smaller and I get filled up because my stomach has shrank. But that was the big thing with me. But sugar it's still big in my life now. Like if I have sugar, it's tough the next day not to have some. It's just addicting.
It is. It's very addicting. You know, I'm not a person who eats really large portions. I don't really crave sugar, thank God. I'm definitely more of a savory person. Like, give me Swiss cheese on ham or pickles any day. But when I have, if I go to a wedding or after a holiday, I wake up the next day ravenous because your body is now like, oh, well, we just got a huge amount of calories. Let's get as much as we possibly can in store for a rainy day because we're designed for safety and protection and survival. So let's store that. Let's store that up. But sugar is its own beast. That's a beast of its own. That's a tough one for sure.
It's a tough one to kick.
It's a really tough one to kick. We live in a society that is so fast-paced that we've really gotten out of touch with how to self-regulate. And in this modern society, for self-regulation, we tend to avoid, distract, medicate, and numb. And one of the biggest numbers is food.
Yeah. Yep. So it's been great talking. Before we go, where can people find you if they either want to reach out to you or if they want to see more about your practice? Where can they go to see that?
Well, my website is somatictherapynyc.com. I've been doing this long enough that I got that domain. It's very easy, I think. If you know what somatic therapy is and you're in New York City, it's pretty easy. I do have a Instagram account, but it is a little neglected. I'm planning to tend to that garden a little bit, and that is Somatic Therapy NY. But you can absolutely find me at somatictherapynyc.com. My email is right there. It's all over the page, and it's not going to a business account. It's going straight to me.
And, of course, you can find all of that in the description of this. So if you decide that you don't want to go and type stuff up, go to the description and go ahead and click the link, and then you can get there. Thank you so much for joining us. This was a really great conversation, and we hope to have you back soon.
Thanks so much for having me, Chris. This was it's always so great to connect with people, and you had some really killer questions, and thanks so much for your generous share of feedback on your journey with taking care of yourself.
Thank you, Andrea, for joining us. Remember, you can find her at Somatic Therapy NYC or somatictherapynyc.com or on social media, wherever you can find her there. If you haven't already, make sure you subscribe to the podcast, whether you're on YouTube, social media, whether on YouTube or Spotify or Apple or Good Pods or whatever it is, the more you subscribe to us, the more you listen, the bigger we can grow, the more we can bring you. So please subscribe and support us. We love you for it already. Make sure you follow us on social media at Mad Props Pod, whether you're on Instagram, X/Twitter, Facebook, anywhere. That is what we are. We are at Mad Props Pod. Go connect with us. Talk to us. Talk to me. I'm the one running it, so you get to talk to me specifically, and I want to talk to you. So please go do that. Make sure you follow Schnabel Studios on Instagram and Twitter as well. I actually worked with Jason Page last weekend. Yes, that Jason Page. He's come on the podcast. There's a card of his right there. He is the Pokemon singer, among many other things. I just worked with him this past weekend. So go check out some behind-the-scenes stuff. Go check out some stuff with me and Jason over there. You can also probably see some stuff on Mad Props Pod page, but go check out the stuff I did with Jason. He was awesome. Thanks, Jason, for having me out and doing some stuff with you. Thank you guys so much again. Give us some love in the comments so we know you listened. We know you enjoyed the episode. Remember, subscribe to the podcast wherever you get it, whether it's YouTube, Spotify, Good Pods, wherever you get it. We'll see you next time right here on Mad Props. Peace out.